This is The Pulse, stories about the people and places at the heart of health and science. I'm Mike and Scott. This story is from our episode around the new science on the age-old question, are we alone? You can find us wherever you get your podcasts. A lot of people decide not to report UFO sightings, not to talk about anything strange they witnessed in the skies, for fear of ridicule. But in 1994, there was a sighting where lots of witnesses came forward, more than 60 of them. It happened at a rural school in Zimbabwe, where children reported seeing alien spacecraft land nearby and being approached by the crew. For about a week, the incident was global news, and then it dropped off the face of the earth. Until last year, when filmmaker Randall Nickerson released a documentary on the sighting entitled Aerial Phenomenon. Liz Tung has more.
When I asked Randall Nickerson what made him want to make a documentary about the Zimbabwe sighting, he told me the answer was personal.
I was also very young when I first saw something. It didn't make sense.
Randall doesn't like talking about exactly what it is that he saw, except to say that it happened while he was out roaming the acres of forest surrounding his childhood home in Massachusetts, and that it happened more than once. It didn't create a conviction in his mind that aliens or UFOs are real, so much as a question.
It's never been a belief thing for me. It's just like nobody's explained that. Nobody's explained the things that I've seen.
Randall considers himself a nuts and bolts kind of guy, a realist. But these experiences never left him. And as he got older, they weighed on his mind.
It's very isolating because you really can't talk about it. And even with other people who have had the same experience, you really don't talk about it too much because it's so disturbing.
For the most part, Randall kept all of it shut away in a closet in his mind. He attended a few meetings with other experiencers, as they're called, met a few people in the world of UFO believers, but mostly he stayed on the sidelines until 2007, when he was approached by the family of Harvard psychiatrist John Mack. Mack had recently died, and now his family wanted Randall to make a short film about his work with UFO experiencers, specifically about one of his most famous cases, the Aerial School Incident, in which 62 children at a rural school in Zimbabwe said they encountered a UFO. Randall had been a friend of John Mack's, so he agreed. And he started pouring through hours of video interviews John Mack had done with the children.
And once I started digging into it, I realized that this was a much bigger story.
A story so big, so strange, that it would end up swallowing the next 15 years of his life. Over that time, Randall made 3 trips to Zimbabwe, conducted dozens of interviews, and immersed himself in hours of archival footage, selections of which is what you'll hear next. For John Mack, it all started with a phone call. It was from a BBC journalist who'd reported on the sighting. No one quite knew what to make of it. And days later, the kids remained terrified and disturbed. By this time, 1994, John Mack had gained a reputation as an expert in the field, so he agreed to come to Zimbabwe as soon as he could. When he arrived at the school a few weeks later, trailed by a filmmaker, he asked Ariel's headmaster what he thought had happened.
Do you think it's possible that one imaginative child had a story and kind of stirred the rest of them? I don't believe.
Mm-hmm. I honestly believe they saw something. But for me to actually draw a conclusion as to what it is, I don't think I could do that at this point in time.
Through interviews with the kids, John Mack started to create a timeline of events. It happened on a Friday morning. The teachers were inside holding a staff meeting, while the students, kids ranging in age from 6 to around 12 or 13, were outside playing, when suddenly there was a flash of light and a sound.
Haley, something scared you, is that right?
Yes.
What scared you?
The noise.
What noise?
The noise that we heard in the air.
You heard a noise in the
yes.
air? What was it like? Like a roar or a buzz or a hum or what kind of a noise?
It was like someone was blowing a flute.
Other kids reported a buzzing sound, like bees or electricity. And then they saw a bright, almost blinding flash of light and a silver object near some trees. The kids all ran over to see what it was. In an interview, one little girl named Candace said at first she and her friends thought it was a house made of metal and glass.
Reflecting in the sun and shining, then we thought, no, it can't be that because there's no houses up there on the rocks.
And then the kids described seeing two figures, small, maybe 4 feet tall, dressed in skin-tight black bodysuits. They had narrow, pale, almost plasticky-looking faces with two enormous eyes. One of the figures stayed with the ship, and the other started running.
And how did he run compared to, say, where a kid would run?
Bouncy, as if a human would run on the moon.
In their interviews with John Mack, the kids over and over focused on his eyes. Big, black, shiny pools that they found they couldn't look away from.
His eyes looked at me as if, I want you.
Like, I want you to come with me? Or
no, I want you to come with me.
The figure never actually said anything, but several of the kids who were looking in his eyes said they somehow received a message in their minds. One boy, who was about 9, described his interpretation of the message.
Hungary, what do you imagine is his reason for visiting Earth?
I think it's about something that's going to happen.
Something that's going to happen?
Yes.
Like what?
There's pollution or something.
Pollution?
Yes.
Somehow there was a message about pollution from the way he was staring?
Yes.
A girl with blonde pigtails said something similar.
I think they want people to know that we're actually making harm on this world and we mustn't get too technologized.
How did that get communicated to you?
It came through my head.
Through your head? Through words or?
My conscience, I think.
Most chilling was the vision of a third little girl.
It was like in the world, all the trees will just go down and there will be no air and people will be dying. I think that in space there's no love and down here there is.
After interviewing all the kids and the teachers, John Mack gave a talk to the parents and he told them he believed them.
The children we talked with clearly were talking about a phenomenon that occurred in physical reality. In other words, their stories were consistent, and the way they talked about it left virtually no question in our minds that what happened was just about what they said happened.
For a while, the story was global news, and then it faded away, until Randall Nickerson picked up the thread in 2007. He ended up interviewing 43 of the former students. Some were excited to talk. Others would only agree to share their memories privately, not for the film.
And that said a lot, too. The hesitancy, you know, the fear of ridicule, fear of not being believed.
I asked Randall if any of them recanted their former stories. And he said no, that in every case, their memories stuck almost exactly to their original stories. What had changed for those who wouldn't go on camera was their willingness to be open about it.
Yeah, I think that's very common. You really don't want to say something to somebody that you really care about or like. That's going to scare them away, you know, whether they believe you or not, right? Whether they believe you and that scares them away, or they think you're crazy and that scares them away, right? I really think that people do try to share it. And they get some negative feedback, and then they learn to be quiet about it.
You can already see that happening in a YouTube video of an interview with the kids a year after the incident.
What happened? You came home, and you told your parents.
Yes. Some of them didn't believe us.
You start to think as if it wasn't true. People say to you, no, it wasn't true, so you think it wasn't true.
Then you think that you're mad. And after that, you get all upset.
Yeah, and everyone starts teasing.
And my friends over the road, when I go there and I tell them about it, they just say, oh, he believes in aliens, oh, he's stupid.
Yeah.
Randall says whether or not the kids were believed or even listened to seemed to have a big impact on whether or not they were traumatized by the memory. Some of the local kids, for example, who grew up in cultures that believed in spirits, seemed to fare better. Others did worse. Like a woman who's featured in the documentary named Emily, whose missionary father forbade his kids from talking about the experience, and soon after moved his family back to Canada. Even today, Emily says in the documentary, she struggles in her relationships and with the memories. Things were also difficult for John Mack. In the years after the Ariel School incident, he did interviews and wrote books and articles about people who had encountered, or in some cases claimed to have been abducted by, UFOs. He was a Pulitzer Prize winner, a tenured Harvard professor, but none of that protected him from the fallout. I talked to his son, Danny Mack.
There was an inquiry at Harvard, and people were challenging his research, challenging his methods, challenging the credibility of what he was reporting. And then at some point, it became this challenge to his tenure and his professorship.
Danny says his dad had always been something of a maverick in the field of psychiatry. But this, UFOs, was a bridge too far for Harvard. And even a lot of John Mack's friends.
That was probably the most painful thing. His close friends, colleagues, his sister, and my mother, for that matter, telling him he'd gone off the deep end. I mean, people who'd totally hung with him as he evolved his career into new areas just all couldn't go there with him. I mean, it stressed everyone's worldviews, and so that was very painful for him.
In the end, Harvard cleared John Mack of any wrongdoing. And in the final years of his life, he continued researching and writing about UFOs. But Randall says the psychiatrist never got over his feelings of betrayal, feelings that are familiar to most, if not all, people who say they've seen UFOs.
Why do you think it's so painful to not be believed and to not be believed about something so major?
I think part of it, the pain, is that when you see something so foreign that is more intelligent than you, the thing you want to do most is run to your own people and hug them. And you can't do that. You know, I think that's the hard part. I mean, it can be extremely traumatic, particularly if you're alone.
The kids from the Ariel School, adults now, are less alone now, though, thanks in part to Randall's documentary. And things like the congressional UFO hearing. A lot of them are happy this stuff is becoming more mainstream. Others, Randall says, are disturbed.
They also try to not think about it in any way possible because of the implications it brings up and then the big world questions that it also brings up, which is what were those things? What does that mean for humanity? I mean, it's the questions that come up are astronomically huge. But the thing I'm excited about is we're addressing it, you know, at least it appears we are. And that to me is exciting.
That story was reported by Liz Tong.